Get 12 weeks of The Spectator in print and online for just £12. And we'll give you a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to a special Saturday edition of Coffeehouse Shots. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by James Forsyth, Fraser Nelson and former Director of Communications under David Cameron, Craig Oliver. When Boris Johnson entered number 10, the second time of a majority of 80, there were several things that his team wanted to change, several battles they wanted to go to, and one of them related to the lobby and the way that political media works. In recent months, the government has been very focused on coronavirus, but as they start to look at other things and returning to their election agenda, that much anticipated shake-up of the lobby is underway. We've had news as of Friday that there are plans to cull some of the civil service press officer roles, slim them down, but also to change the afternoon lobby to a televised event. It's been compared to the US setup, and this will include a new appointee who will be giving the briefings. James, can you give us some of the details and perhaps the motivation behind this from the Downing Street perspective?
So the motivation is essentially to cut out the middlemen. And it is modelled on these coronavirus daily press briefings that they've done that got, I think, much bigger audiences than anyone expected. And the idea is that the government, you know, yes, there are questions from the press, but the government gets to directly get its message over to the viewer. Now, they have compromised. This is not the kind of full let's abolish the lobby thing that some people around Boris Johnson have talked about in the past. It's a halfway house because there'll be a traditional lobby briefing in the morning and then this new televised setup in the afternoon. I think the televised setup will be very different because it will, I suspect, encourage slightly more grandstanding on behalf of reporters, but it's also going to mean that things are on camera. And so it will be harder to dodge questions, not answer them, all of that. I mean, I am fascinated, though, because I don't know, on a boring Tuesday in the middle of March, how many people are really going to be tuning in to watch the afternoon government press briefing. I think these are going to become quite a kind of niche interest. This is not going to attract the public interest, I don't think, that the coronavirus briefings did at the beginning when everyone was so concerned about this disease.
Craig, you've obviously have a lot of experience at managing government communications, and so far the proposals have received a mixed reaction from journalists. We have the Society for Editors suggesting that they're not against the plans full stop, but there's a slight concern, you know, is this to avoid scrutiny or is this to increase transparency? Do you think this is a format that should help the government?
Look, I think it's a tricky one. The truth is that there is a degree of doing the right thing behind this. I think that there is a sense that they do want to be in a position where it can be transparent, where you can be out there and the government message can go out there. And, you know, I think it works both ways in terms of transparency. What we saw in the coronavirus briefings was a lot of journalists got a lot of criticism for looking like they were just interested in gotcha moments. And there was a lot of evidence that the public didn't like that. So it's transparent for journalists as well, and they're on the record. The thing that's attractive to them is, as James says, is you can directly get your message across there. It will be clipped up for the bulletins. It's there. It's straightforward and clear. What happens with the current briefing system is it's always plays through the filter of someone else. It's also always done by a civil servant. So what the civil servant is doing is often pulling their punches, being careful not to be political. So that appeals to them too, is that they can go out there and they can be overtly political, and that person can go and sing the praises of the government and the Prime Minister and make overtly political points.
Fraser, Craig touches on the fact that during these coronavirus briefings, we saw initially at least a backlash against journalists, and internal polling in number 10 suggested that the public didn't like gotcha questions. In fact, special advisers were at times told, you know, not to worry about sometimes how difficult these were because the public were on the government side to a degree. So one of the comparisons that has already been drawn is that this is a Trumpian approach to the media. Do you think that's the case?
I think it's, well, certainly this is in deference to America. They're looking for their West Wing moment. They're looking for their CJ to host these briefings. And it's also the case that journalists did not emerge brilliantly out of these briefings. If you look at a lot of the reaction afterwards, people were scathing, really, about journalists who, in the eyes of a lot of people, wanted to pose to ask. Do you remember when Dominic Cummings did his televised a Rose Garden press conference, it seemed to a lot of people that the journalists were asking the same question every time, trying to compete with each other for their own sort of dramatic poise. Now, to me, that's what I don't like about these briefings, because of course it will incentivise every single journalist, especially the broadcast journalists, to go for a sequence where part of the drama is they're asking the question in some accusatory way, and then the government being seen to be on the ropes and defending it. Now, as a result of that, you will get, my concern is, in the press briefings, you'll get what we had in the Dominic Cummings briefing. Journalists pretty much asking the same question, whatever the big question is of the day, so they can show themselves on the evening programme, putting that question to the government. And also, the other thing is journalists, print journalists, aren't supposed to look elegant, to look edifying, to be very telegenic. In a way, you can ask sort of slightly annoying questions that get under the skin of the person to try to. You can various techniques you can use to get answers out of people. They don't always have to be accusatory, but journalists will be very fearful if the camera is on, very fearful of being seen to suck up to the government, asking a question that seemed to be too nice or too supine. So you're going to end up with, more hostile questions that will make the journalist look bad, which won't get a good answer, which might be good for the government, but I'm not sure they'll be good for democracy. I imagine, by the way, that Sir Craig will have had quite a few similar conversations in Number 10, should we let in the cameras. I imagine every Prime Minister in the last 20 years has had this sort of conundrum.
Yes, that's certainly true, Fraser. I remember sitting in back of the car with David Cameron in the 2015 general election, and he talked about, should we do this? We actually backed off because we thought the print journalists would cry foul and rain down hell on us. And I think it's a sign of quite how much print journalism has been weakened, your present company accepted, in the last 5 years, that they feel actually willing to do this. The other big point I think to watch out for is, I think that there might be an element in government that be careful what you wish for. If this person becomes the most famous person in the government, challenging the Prime Minister, lots of profiles on them, lots of coverage of them, a lot of people in the cabinet who already feel that they've got a kind of secondary or tertiary role at the moment will start feeling very jealous and start feeling a bit pissed off about it. So I think that they need to be careful about that, and it'll be fascinating to see how that person's ego is kept in check. The final point I'd make is, there's a reason why the lobby is done at the way it is at the moment. Government and journalists like the fact you can fudge it a little bit. The government can peel it back if there's somebody's gone out there and said something a bit silly. They can't in this situation. It's on camera, it's on the record, and it's there to batter them and be played over and over again on television and on social media.
It's also going to tighten the grip of the centre of Number 10 on the rest of government, because every department is going to be required to produce answers ahead of these briefings every day. In the same way that PMQs, kind of once a week, Number 10 basically shakes the tree and says, we're worried we're going to get asked questions about this Department of Education or Department of Health. You've got to give us the answers. You've got to tell us what is going on. This is going to happen on a daily basis now, because whoever is doing this briefing, as Craig says, is not going to want to be exposed to walking out there and being able to say, well, I can't answer that question, I can't answer this, I don't know about this, I don't know about that. So what this is going to turn into is also an instrument of central Number 10 control over the rest of government.
And Craig touches on the fact that whoever gets this job to be the person who every day fields questions, whether it's a niche audience or a rather large audience, is quickly going to become one of the most well-known faces of this government. So who are the runners and riders, and what do you think they are looking for exactly? Fraser, do you want to go first?
Well, we've had some people mentioned Alistair Stewart, of course, formerly of ITN, now seen to be in the market. Then there is Allegra Stratton, quite highly regarded, ex-ITV, recently gone into government, so in that sort of pool of Number 10 and Treasury. But the funny thing, and I wonder what Sir Craig thinks about this, but it used to be the whole point of the Prime Minister's spokesman was they were not a character in and of themselves. I mean, Blair tried that with Alistair Campbell, and it backfired because Campbell became this figure. And they thought, OK, let's get rid of him and let's have two civil servants, call them the Prime Minister's official spokesman, whose role was not to be a personality. So the funny thing is that you will be appointing a personality who will have a bigger profile than most cabinet members. Now, can you find somebody like Anne Chivas. She was I thought, very competent, but typical civil servant. I mean that as a compliment, in that she was quiet, modest. She gave short answers, accurate ones, but she was not self-aggrandizing. So I wonder, is there a character in civil service like that?
I think Fraser makes a great point. I would put at the top of the advert, narcissists need not apply. You really do not want somebody who's going out there and playing it for their own ego throughout. And I think that will be a real problem if you do, because it will cause lots of trouble. You also need somebody fluent, who's got miles on the clock, who's been through a lot of situations, is unflappable. I do think that it's interesting that you were saying to me that they're keen on a woman. I think that they can see a lot of reasons why they would want to do that. This government is perceived as quite macho. It doesn't have enough strong women out there. So it'll be interesting, and take a very, very special person, I think, to carry this off and do it well.
And James, in the briefing so far, there's a suggestion that they want someone who has quite a bit of broadcast experience, so potentially a former journalist or a current journalist. Do you think the preference is to have a current broadcast journalist move over?
I think they're doing kind of open applications, so I presume they are thinking along those lines. I think there is an accountability question here, which is this going to become a reason why ministers don't appear on TV shows? Because that, I think, will be difficult. People are like, well, you can ask your questions at the briefing. I think there's an important thing that this cannot be a substitute for cabinet ministers sitting down for long-form interviews on their own, because this spokesperson is not going to be an elected figure. And yes, this spokesperson can speak on behalf of the government, but scrutiny would also require secretaries of state and the Prime Minister himself to sit down to do proper extended interviews. I mean, that is kind of one of the questions that you could get a kind of veneer of accountability and scrutiny when actually chipping away at some of the stuff that is most important.
I spoke to somebody in Number 10 about this last night, and they were talking about it. They actually said that this is months away before it happens, so I think they're going to have to really work quite hard on this. And I think that when they start doing the interviews and probably do some of the prep sessions, they'll start seeing some of the flaws of this. Overall, I'm hugely supportive. I think it's a great thing. It's a great thing, transparent. But I think that there may be a few voices at the end of this who think, well, we should maybe have been careful what we wished for.
Thank you, Craig, Fraser and James, and thank you for listening.
Get 12 weeks of The Spectator in print and online for just £12, and we'll give you a £20 Amazon gift voucher absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.